Hey everybody, John here. Before we start the episode, if you could just go and subscribe, rate, review, you know, give us a little love. It helps people find the podcast. We're trying to grow our audience. We would really appreciate it. Thanks. Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. We've got a very special guest today, but yes, we're not going to get to her yet. Not yet.
She can wait.
Yes. I'm your host, John Ruby. I'm here with my main man,
Corbin Coyle. Hey everybody.
Hey everyone, excited to be here. We have a fun topic to start with, which is, Corbin, I want to ask you, back in the day, you know, there's these places, I don't even really even call them amusement parks, but like go-karts, mini golf, you know, like wax museums, I'll even like all these kind of like, yeah, like they're almost like, they're not, you know, amusement parks, they're not circuses, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? They're, yeah, kind of in this like little area. It's not kids' birthdays, but it's like, you know, you can enjoy it as a kid or an adult. What sticks out to you? What was a favorite of yours?
Favorite of mine?
That type of stuff.
The first thing that comes up is when I was a kid, I really struggled with saying a couple words, and one of them, I love going to miniature golf, and I would call it miniature golf. I don't know why, and I would say hangerber. I don't know why I couldn't say those words. It made them harder. But the thing that comes to mind is, I think it's called Go-Kart World. Up the freeway, it's like near us. Like I would go there with all of it. Was awesome. It was like the best kind of time to just go be in.
That was in LA.
I was in LA, and it's, yeah, just, I have such fond memories of like birthday parties that would be there, you know, where people would kind of gather and you just go a million miles an hour around this track and you're crashing into your friends. It was a blast. What about you? Because you weren't in LA, so what was kind of the stuff?
No. I mean, where I grew up, the big thing, I mean, the big kind of amusement park was, there was a Great America, Six Flags Great America. That was the big one. And if you were like good in school, you got to go like at the end of the year. That was the exciting part. So I loved Six Flags.
That's fun.
And then I mentioned it before, but Wisconsin Dells in the Midwest was like the place. And that had like everything. It had the video games, the go-karts, all that. And there's a go-kart place there, Corbin. I got to show you later. You drive through a huge like 40-foot Trojan horse. You literally drive through the horse. Yeah. The track goes through the horse.
That's,
and so
cool.
We used to, and there's actually a really quick fun story, which is my dad and I and all my cousins and my uncles and my aunts and my nieces and nephews, we'd all go-karting. So there'd be like 12 of us on the track. And then there was always like maybe 15 carts. So there'd be like three people we didn't know. So we'd go to this Dells and we'd do it every year. We'd do this like, you know, every year. And one time, my dad and I are driving and we had kind of like slow go. You're always checking out for the fast go-karts. We had like slow ones.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, so like people are like passing us and we're like, oh God, this sucks. Well, there's one kid who's probably, I don't know, 14, had a really fast cart and he's trying to pass us. So I swear, without saying anything, I look over at my dad. He looks at me. We just kind of part the seas and the kid starts going right through like, oh, this is going to be easy. And then we slam together and the kid goes off spinning.
Oh my God.
And afterwards, he wasn't hurt or anything. We thought it was the funniest thing. And my mom was like, how could you do that?
You
like,
and your dad are the
kid
exact
thought he had it easy.
Same person. It's crazy.
It was unspoken.
Yeah, just you knew.
This little
so
kid
mischievous.
With a fast card is not getting by us. You know?
I love
so,
it.
Probably not a great example of being a role model, but we didn't let that kid pass us. It was not allowed. So no. I don't know. Go-karting sticks out.
That's me. Amazing. Yeah.
But yeah, so I love it. I love it, Corbin. I like the mispronunciation. I want to get to our guest. I'm super excited that she's here.
Yeah.
She is someone who's a wonderful person. She is an actor, casting director, professor, and director. Let's welcome Victoria Hoffman to the show. Hi, Victoria.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Victoria, do you have a favorite, like a mini golf, anything in that world, amusement park?
I was going to say, do bumper cars count?
Oh, yeah.
100%. That's sure. Exactly.
I love bumper cars.
Yes.
It's like, okay, well, you know, I tend to be a kind of, oh, isn't she so sweet, right?
Yeah,
you get me,
yeah,
behind the wheel of the bumper. I'm like, get out of my way. Boom. You know?
Oh. I love it. I always feel like those, you could never get enough speed, but every once in a while, you,
oh, yeah,
really like either get hit or hit someone and you're like, oh my God, this feels like dangerous. So yeah.
I wonder now in my advanced years,
yeah,
do you know, like if I get like rear-ended by the bumper car in the back. You know what I mean? Like, they hit you pretty hard. I'm like, would I get whiplash or something?
My sciatica. The last time I went on a roller coaster. Yeah, the last time I went on a roller coaster, I was like, I'm not enjoying this as much as when I was like a kid. Like, you just like afterwards, you're like, I got a little more of a headache now. Yeah, it
definitely. I can't do that as much. Like, I have to scream so I don't feel it in my stomach. But you know what the worst one was? Did you? Mid-America, you might have had that. Remember the things that had the centrifugal force that you stuck to the side of the wall?
Yes, I loved that. Yes, I love those. That was my favorite. Yes, we had that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Those are very fun. Yeah. That's. And then there was a rumor, Victoria, that someone once threw up and it stuck against the wall. That was the famous rumor.
We had that rumor too.
Yeah, I think everybody had that rumor. So whether that was true, you know, like Corbin.
Can you imagine being in there if that actually happened?
No.
That would not be good.
I was actually the one who did throw up against the wall.
So yeah, you're right. Not a rumor.
It's all that cotton candy. Yeah.
Well, Victoria, super excited that you're here. I wanted to jump in. I wanted to start first kind of with your casting journey. So did you, how did you get into casting to start?
So what's interesting is when I came out to LA, fresh with my Master of Fine Arts in acting and directing, right? what I discovered is I'm a terrible waiter. I was a really bad waiter. I could not, I couldn't remember more than like a thing at a time. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, well, I got to find something else to make money. Right. So I went over to PAG, the Professional Artists Group. At the time, it was a commercial casting facility that Carolyn Barry ran. And, and I kind of like, okay, and like, I don't know, like, can I volunteer? Right. And they needed different people to work the office. So I started working there being like, I wouldn't say an office manager, but like you're running the front desk and then along with Sam Pancake was there at the same time. And of course, he's made quite a name for himself in the comedy world. And then what started happening is the casting directors there would say, hey, can you run the door for me? And back in the days, there were Polaroids, right? Like, so you do the Polaroids and you organize everybody and you bring them in the room. Then those casting directors, as they would work other places because they just rent studio space wherever it's available. Oh, can you come work for me for the day? So then I became a commercial casting assistant.
Mm-hmm. Who are those casting directors, Victoria? I'm just curious.
Paul Ventura and Mick Dowd.
Oh, yeah, Mick Dowd.
And Danny Goldman before he had his own place. Then I went on to work with like Steven Erdek and a ton with Terry Berland. I was actually like her person for about 3 years. Kathy Carlton, all the people at West Side Casting when it was there, So, and there were a whole bunch of us, right? Where you'd freelance, you'd work in these different offices. Oh, Arlene Schuster-Goss, I loved working there. And Franny Selkirk, I loved working there.
Was Mimi Webb Miller there at all? Mimi Webb Miller, was she there at all when you were there? No, that might have been after.
It might have been after. Okay. Right. But so, all these people and you'd assist and you'd run sessions and, here and there I would be a session director, but like that's a lot more in terms of because you're shooting everybody and directing everybody and then, well, in current time, uploading everything. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to think about? But I will tell you something. If you're going to have a day job, it's a fantastic job. I mean, there was a whole sort of unspoken, ooh, I've got a commercial audition across town. Hey, can I get in and out in 10 minutes? And I got to get back to, my session across town. And I think often we would really help each other that way. Yep. And sometimes you'd miss auditions, you just couldn't make them. So that's a thing you'd have to, be at peace with. But at the same time, you're at a casting facility, right? And like you're at 200 South. There's how many studios there? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, oh my gosh, you're right for this. You want to come on in? Sure, I got a break. Let me just go in and do it, So you're around it. Mm-hmm. And you're around actors. And so it was always just a really good place to network and meet people and make friends. And then also just like, wow, you're seeing it from the other side. So, to have a really realistic relationship with how the casting process works, right? So it allows you to not take so many things personally in terms of your work, in terms of like, man, I thought I had that call back in the bag. They loved me. Why didn't I get it? You know, I, you know, and because so often it's like, well, no, I understand, you know, all the different things. And so I think, you know, I was doing that. And then for Terry Berland, I became her voiceover session director. So I got into directing actors more. And then all the while, I was always a member of a theater company, you know, because, you know, you like Jones, you got to get your, you know, you got to get your theater on, your acting on, right?
Exactly.
And so at West Coast Ensemble back in the day, I remember going to auditions and just being there forever and saying, hey, I work in casting. We're supposed to have a company job. How about make me like that person? Maybe I can just like actually set up these sessions and give us a schedule so people don't have to be here so long. Like, we should be able to streamline this. And then I later on became a member at Rogue Machine Theater, and you know, all these amazing working actors working all over the place. And same thing, it was like, why is anybody at an audition for 2 hours? This is crazy. It's different, like when you're doing a callback and you're doing mix and match, sometimes you can be there for longer, but you warn people, right? So I think then that's how I got into theater casting, because I, you know, with Rogue Machine, it became play after play after play after play, to now I'm the resident casting director. And then I would say to some, you know, directors around town, like, when do I get the cast for you? Oh, and you know, and so now I am, you know, so.
So do you think, I mean, I always think it's great. Like I kind of what you're saying, I always think it's great because actors will ask me this. I think it's great to have a job in the business. You know what I mean? Like in casting or, you know, so I kind of say there's like, you know, there's like three parts. One is hopefully you can kind of pay your bills a little bit with it or more. Hopefully there's some flexibility, you know, somewhat. And then the third thing is that it doesn't drain you so much. You have no energy to do like your own thing, you know, but I always think like, if you're a nice person, if you're working hard and you're around it, like you said, like you're around 200 South or a place with, you know, then people want to help you out. You know what I mean? When they can, you know, not all the time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Right. You know,
I absolutely. Like I find, you know, actors, I guess some people have called, oh, it's so cutthroat and everybody's out for themselves. But my experience has always been like, oh my gosh, I just auditioned for this thing. You're so right for it. Have your agent call. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just feel like when you're around, you know, when you're around your fellow actors, you know, I mean, just that exchange of information even, or like, oh.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Victoria. I think it's so true. There is a lot of support between actors. I think the only time it's kind of quote unquote cutthroat is like when there's like three people and you're like, I really want this job. But you're like, if you like the other people, you're like, hey, that's fine, but I just want this. But you're right. I don't think, I feel a lot of camaraderie between actors.
I do too. I mean, listen, yeah. if you're in a space, so much is remote now that if it's between three people, you've got no contact with the other actors that might be up for the same role, right? Yeah. But it used to be like, yeah, you'd go in for those final callbacks and you'd go into a casting office and, you know, there were people that were known to try to
play mind
get inside your head, mess with you, zap your focus so you couldn't really do your best, you know.
Corbin wears a helmet in a callback, so they can't, he can't see or hear anything. It's amazing. It blocks everything.
I start screaming
out
too. It's great.
But listen, I think, you know, commercials, so many more are finally back in the room and those callbacks, and there's always like a lot of people around. And I just feel you just got to do what you got to do to retain your focus and your space, whatever that looks like. And the beautiful thing is just you put your earbuds in and you're good.
Like, stay in your world. So Victoria, I got a question. This is something that, you know, another question that comes up is, how do actors kind of stand out to you? Part one. And then part two, how do they kind of stay on your radar? Because I think those are two things that actors are always, you know, how do I stand out in an audition? And how do I kind of stay, you know, on a casting director?
I feel like You know, in an audition situation, so when it's live, like the theater auditions we do, the directors that I work with, even first sessions, they like to do them in person. They're still accepting tape if somebody just can't make it, because we understand that, you know, that sometimes it's just difficult to get away. Mm-hmm. But and I feel the actors that stand out the most are the ones that where you can tell they did the work. Mm-hmm. You can tell they read the whole play because there aren't any references that they don't understand. Mm-hmm. And you can, whether or not they're on book, like I don't care about that, but you can tell that they've made specific choices, that they've researched the playwright, that they've, you know, that they've and then beyond that, when they come in the room, they're still open and available to anything that a director might throw at them. Now, you don't always get direction in a first call, but you will always do in a callback, or at least you hope you do, right? Mm-hmm. But still, you're not so stuck in your specific choices that you're not open. But the last thing I ever want to hear an actor say is a director says, did you get a chance to read the play? Oh, no, I'm sorry, I didn't. Or did you get a chance to read the play? Well, I'm halfway through, mm-hmm. right? Now, if it's somebody where it's been a request that I've been given very, very last minute and they've only had 48 hours, I will jump in and say, actually, you know, we were just able to reach out to them yesterday. So mm-hmm. like I will cover for that actor. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But so okay. So in that sense, really like strong choices really stand out to me. Like you can just tell that the preparation was there, that it's not so willy-nilly. Actors who really listen well, that stands out to me, particularly on self-tapes, because you know, there's a lot of times I can watch a self-tape and people get great people reading with them, or maybe they don't have great people, but there's still people reading with them. And there's something that that other character says where an actor doesn't respond to it at all. Like I don't see it in their face. I don't see it in their behavior, you know? And I think like, oh, you're not listening. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a red flag for me, you know? So.
Yeah, that's so right. I just saw Alan Rickman talking about that exact thing, and what he was kind of saying that I liked, or at least kind of what I took from it, was that idea of what the other person's saying is then what initiates something inside of you, mm-hmm. what sparks something yeah. in you. Do you know what I mean? So if yeah. like that is not hitting you, then why would it spark anything, a thought or a word mm-hmm. or an image, right? So not allowing that to hit you, like you're saying, or not seeing it hit you.
Yeah.
You know, that's what helps spark whatever's, you know, coming back, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like staying on my radar, one of the good things is I still go and I see a lot of theater, mm-hmm. you know, and anybody that's auditioned for me before, like they'll always like email me and let me know when they're in a thing, or, you know, social media, they'll like, you know, I did a thing, you know, like send me a little message, you know, which I never mind. Like, I finally got to the place I understand other casting directors where it might be like, I'm so glad to know you're doing that thing. I'm not going to be able to get to that thing, mm-hmm. but I'm so glad to know you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Yay. You know, because yeah. like sometimes there's like, how do I split myself in four? Mm-hmm. There's like four things that I want to go see, you know?
Yep.
And like, I can only choose one, you know, you know, which kills me. But, and then also like, if I'm doing anything and a breakdown is released, I always, and on whatever of the platforms, you know, whichever one I'm using for that one, I always make it so people can leave notes. And so I'm like, leave me a note. Like sometimes maybe remind me if I'm not remembering, you know, it's so weird. And I never thought that, oh, how are you going to get here? But you know so many actors. And I sometimes like will look at my Facebook and be like, yes, I actually know all those people. I really, really do. Now, can I think of all those people right in the moment? No. And like, I have to go back through and like, yes, love you, love you, love you, mm-hmm. love you, love you. You know what I mean? Yep. So, so certainly I would, you know, yeah, you know, taking the opportunity to leave those notes is a great thing, you know, because it will jog my memory and remind me. It's like, oh, that's where I met you. That's right. Yeah. You know, And also just keeping all the online materials up to date, like Actors Access is one thing, IMDb. Most TV casting directors don't really use people's websites. They want to see it on IMDb. But if I'm casting theater, IMDb doesn't tell me that.
Yeah.
If and for people that are interested, for your listeners that are interested in doing live theater,
yes.
IMDb, you know, they don't. It doesn't tell me that, you know, your website will tell me that, or your Actors Access will tell me that, you know, like that's a thing that you do and are interested in doing, you know, so.
I think a website gives a bit of a professional edge to a degree. Like it kind of, it's not, nobody's ever like excited to go to somebody's website, but when you see it there, you're like, oh, okay, this is all their work. This is all the things that I am interested in knowing that this person.
Yeah. Heard. I mean, listen, I know for my website, I'm like, oh my God, I have to do an update.
Yeah, it's always
but mine was built me making an admission. Mine was built on Adobe Muse, which is no longer supported. So I'm in the process of transferring it over, right? Yeah. Which, you know, it's like, okay, so for the time being, it's like, I understand. Like if I go to a website and it says under construction, I'm not going to like ding anybody. It's like, nope, I get it, but
I always joke with Corbin every time there's like a blog on a website. I'm like, Corbin, how many years ago do you think this blog ended? And whenever you click on it, it was like 6 years ago. They got people get excited about blogging, and then they do like one blog or two, and then it just floats up there. So
yeah, and they need to like remove that from the website. For
yeah,
sure.
Exactly. But I always say people Google other people. They Google them and they say, oh, great, they got a website. Okay, I want to look at the photos. I want to look, you know, that's just, we're curious and we can do that. And I've had that when I've run castings where someone leaves a room and they Google the person's name and they just want to see what comes up. And so I think, you know, whether that's Instagram, you want to know what's on there, whether it's your website or whatever, IMDb, I think all that stuff is part of the world, you know, whether we want to accept it or not. And so I think you're right. You know, you kind of have to just take a look and, you know, see what's
I shouldn't say surprising, but I do find in sessions sometimes, and you're wondering about a person, sometimes more than IMDb, people really will go to Instagram.
Yeah.
They'll be like, what do they really look like? Wait, let's go to Instagram and see. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I know. Like, yeah. Well, you can get kind of a, you know, some sort of feeling for them. Yeah, which I think is interesting. Victoria, I want to talk to you. I went to opening night of a show that you cast with Rogue Machine called The Heroes of the Fourth Turning by Will Arbery. Mm-hmm. Got to meet him, who was really nice to chat with him. How did that process go? Maybe that's something that could be kind of just like, you know, when were you kind of brought on? Just because I think people, if they're interested in theater, that's it was a great show and lovely actors. And,
it's interesting. Yeah, the actors are getting such incredible accolades. You know, this particular Alchemy just worked out so beautifully. So with Rogue Machine, we do have a season, but sometimes things are a little open-ended as to when a specific piece is going to be done. And if you have a piece that's going well, that extends, maybe you're going to change the other piece, right? So, we knew that Heroes was coming up, and, we got lucky because Will is now living in Los Angeles, so he could be here more, which is fantastic. He could be at those callbacks, which is also great. I probably knew about this one, like, okay, this is a green light, we're gonna go. And it was maybe like a month before. Sometimes I like more time than that. I mean, there's been times where I've been given information about 3 weeks before something was supposed to begin, and that's not a lot of time to release a breakdown and then look at everybody, consider everybody, look at reels, figure out who you're going to bring in, you know, all that kind of stuff. But because Heroes of the Fourth Turning is a story that involves characters that are white and that are conservative, right? Well, as you can imagine, there's a wealth of wonderful actors in this town. You know, that it was already on their radar. So I had a whole lot of actors reaching out to me saying, I really want to, I'd love to read, I'd love to come in, I worked on this, I did whatever.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, traditionally what I'll do is I, for the most part, use Actors Access when I'm doing theater and not casting networks. And I know I have to think about that because, you know, again, there are so many sites that we are supposed to be, you know, have our materials on. And I had an actor friend of mine, you know, call me, and she was a little bent out of shape, and she's like, oh. She's like, I cannot pay for all these things. She goes, I'm doing the free version of Actors Access because my agents submit for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to pay to have mm-hmm. videos up because of what, you know, mm-hmm. like one more charge, right? Mm-hmm. So if I submit to you on Actors Access, that means I have to pay $2. I'm like, oh, didn't think about that, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. Right. So that is me saying to everybody, look, if Actors Access is not your thing, and if you see something and you're like, I don't want to pay the $2, I mean, seek me out, find a way to reach out. My email's even on my website. It's like, hey, I really want to audition for this. Here's my materials. Mm-hmm. So I can at least look at them. So because I do need to look at a resume. I do need to sometimes look at a reel of somebody that maybe I don't know as well. Mm-hmm. Rogue Machine's a membership company. There's lots of members, so I have to think of them first. But when I'm doing outside casting, I'm just looking at everything, mm-hmm. right? You know, and then I gotta figure out, like, okay, who do I think is a slam dunk that is gonna come into this thing? Who am I not so sure about? Maybe I'll send them a self-tape request with like maybe the first side that we're going to use, just so I get a sense of who they are and if they're going to be right. And then we'll do like a first in-person session. Most of the places that I cast might have like a couple of days set aside for that. A Noise Within will do, you know, they'll do a full 8-hour day, like 10 to 1, 2 to 5, wow, right? Okay. If there's that many people to see, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But at Rogue Machine, at Skylight, at places like that, a lot of times we might just do like, hey, we're going to do 4 or 5 hours this day and 4 or 5 hours that day. Like they tend to want to be super specific even in the first round and not see the world. But I need to look at as much as I can look at so that I can deliver that. And I have, I have discussions with a director as to what they think the character is. And of course, they're going to have their own ideas and their people that they want to bring in as well. But then often it's like, well, but I saw this great actor in a reading, and, you know, I mean, listen, during the shutdown, I can't tell you how many Zoom readings I attended. It's like, yeah. Actors are out there and they're making work and I want to see it, you know, I want to be able to move them forward. So for Heroes, let's see, three of the actors are Rogue Machine Company members, because one of them, Emily James, who plays Emily, is a friend of Will's. And is the one who reached out initially to say, we want to do this at Rogue Machine. What's that look like, you know? Yep. And then two of the actors are new to us. Mm-hmm. Does that answer it?
Yeah, for sure. No. Lovely. I think that's lovely, because I think, you know, if you're doing a commercial casting, you know, if you're doing a theater casting, if you're doing TV, film, there's similarities, but there's also kind of differences. And I think it's also with what you're saying, it was really interesting, Victoria, because it's people are trying to find opportunities. And it's like, well, how do you do that? You know, how do you stay active? How do you stay busy? I love what you said. I saw that you helped cast a Streetcar at Boston Court. Was that a fun one? I mean, that's like just such a, you know, those two main roles are so juicy.
That was one of the ones where we were at an opening night at Rogue Machine, and it might have been for Les Blancs or something like that, which was a Lorraine, like a sort of rarely produced Lorraine Hansberry play, right? And like 24 people in it, half the cast or more was African-American, you know, and there were a whole lot of like non-speaking roles, like this huge, you know, cast, you know, and which we got done, and it was a beautiful, beautiful cast. And Michael McKetty was there, who directed that Streetcar at Boston Court. And he's the person I said, Michael McKetty, when do I get to cast for you? And they, do you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
This is brazen.
Wow. Yes.
And a few months later, I got the call, and he's like, you know, how would you feel about doing this? And also because he was doing like like a modern multicultural streetcar. So the only person that was white was Blanche.
Interesting.
Everybody else were actors of color, or one actor was trans. He wanted the, you know, the neighbor character to be a trans actress. And so, you know, we were really opening up and looking at everyone. And I'm going to tell you, that was an ongoing process, you know.
Sure.
Well, because it's still Tennessee Williams, and it's still but he wanted everybody to retain their modernness.
Yeah.
In the material, so it's New Orleans now. Do you know what I mean? So, yes, or at least you know, 2019, right? And I do want to speak to this, because I also want to say to actors. Actors definitely who are auditioning for theater, but for anything that you audition for, like, you know, the wealth of talent in Los Angeles is vast and so impressive. And you can often cast these pieces three times over. You know, there's just like, that's one way to tell the story. That's another way to tell the story. And ultimately, it's like for theater, it's in the director's hand. What's the way that that director wishes to tell their story? So they might absolutely love you and love your work. But there's something about this other pairing, this other combination, this other alchemy or chemistry that is working better for them, you know? Because I know it's disappointing, especially when you get to a callback situation and you're like, oh, you want it so much, and you feel and you know it's yours to do, and you don't get it. And it's, and I just don't think that ever has anything to do with what you did in the room. If you walk out of the room feeling like, ah, yeah, I nailed that, then you probably did. So yeah, no, that was really, it was really fun. And like, you know, the actress that played Stella, Maya, like went on and did a series after that. And
oh my gosh.
That's yeah. Those lead actors all sort of went on and got series after that show. Like,
yeah, I was looking at, I didn't know it's my buddy. I know Deshaun.
Yeah. Oh,
Deshaun played Stanley. Yeah. Deshaun's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. He's great. He's going to be on the pod, I think, soon. So,
oh,
yeah,
good. Right. Good. Because you know, he's like doing the TV and he's still coming back and producing theater.
Yeah. No, I love
He's never left it behind. Yeah.
No. Victoria, how did you get connected to USC and doing things there? You're such a connected person, all these worlds you're in. How did you get connected to USC?
Well, USC or AFI?
Well, sorry, I feel like, did you cast a couple things for USC?
Oh, maybe I did do. Like, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I wasn't sure you were. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, well, yes, so.
Yes.
Okay. So I would always get invited because so many dear friends of mine teach at USC, right? And so I would get invited to the, like the MFA, the, not just the showcases, but like they have a three show rep, you know, or there might be an undergrad BFA show or whatever. And so I would get invited to those and see and be like, oh my God, okay, this is cool. I love these actors. This is great. And so that was like one of the first experiences I had. And then there was, somebody, a producer at Rogue Machine, Sarah Fenton, and she decided to go to film school. And she was producing a short, one of their thesis films. And her director said, I want to know how I can get actors like those actors I see at Rogue Machine in my film. And she said, easy, hire our casting director. You know?
Amazing.
You know?
Yes.
So I had a conversation with him and we got along and I'm like, oh yeah, I can do, like, yeah, I love this piece. And if you get it right, but you got to get right, you got to get the casting right.
Yeah.
Because it was a really unusual sort of surrealistic out of the box kind of thing. And so I cast that for him and the film did very well. And then I cast another one after that. And, for the one piece, the USC, other, that was like, I think he was going to edit or be an AD. He needed his, he was still looking for the lead for his, thesis film.
Yep.
And it was like, it was going to be a musical and it was, and he needed somebody that could basically be a version of Mary Poppins who could sing opera, but who was funny. Okay. Right.
Wow.
And, and we're in the middle of casting, you know, this other piece. And, I said, well, actually wait, two people, There's an actress coming in. She's exactly that. I'll introduce you. So I ended up casting the lead in his.
Amazing.
Not officially. Yeah. So,
That's funny.
and then they went on to make so much stuff together. That's Julia Axe. She does all these videos as Mary Poppins,
Oh,
but
wow.
doing modern music, you
Perfect.
know? So it's so funny. It's so funny. And she said to me one day, like a few years later, she's like, "Wait a minute. Oh my God. You're kind of responsible for me meeting my, you know, my partner, my creative partner." You know what I mean? And like even creating that character, I was like, "I kind of
It
am."
was me.
But I mean, I think that's a lot of what we do in casting, right? Is, you know, your whatever project you're working on, you're creating an extended family. Those people are going to be working together for a long time. And so when we talk about the chemistry and the alchemy and the tapestry, the fabric of what we're making, it's not just the characters, it's the people. You know, you've like, "Oh, I know who you need to know. You need to know this person." Right? And you know they're going to make something together. And same thing, I know who we need to bring in this mix, this person. You know, energetically, it's just such a good fit. Do you know? So I think we look at that as well. So that's that. Yeah, that's how I, you know, got into doing stuff at USC. I'd like to get back to it actually. So
You recommend for, or do you have any tips for people who have wanted to get into like producing either their own theater piece or their own film or something, like how they find ways to kind of like, because a lot of people don't understand the casting side. So I feel like there's ways to kind of get into that world. And have you seen any ways to do that successfully and for, you know, a lower budget if you're kind of new to it or anything like that?
For casting, I mean,
For like producing your own
getting it
thing.
cast or actually getting it done. I mean, the thing is now that we've got the micro budget agreement, it's kind of great. It's 20K or less, you know, whatever you put into it. And usually these things are much less and they're meant to go to festivals and such, right? Longer conversation if you're doing a short film or an indie or something and you're going to go do a fundraise. But if you're doing these smaller pieces, so you have that agreement which allows you to use whoever you want, right? And you have your extended community of actors, but you can post a breakdown and see who submits, right? You can also say, "Oh, I've got this amazing project. I've got this beautiful actor in mind. You know, listen, reach out," right? You know, you can like contact the manager via IMDb, or you can, you know, say, you can go to Instagram and just leave a message and say, "I've got this great script. I'd love for you to look at it. If you're interested, here's my contact." And if they are, they'll get in touch. And isn't that beautiful, right? And then I think, and then it comes down to, we all know more people than we realize, right? You just have to communicate with your friends and your community. "I'm doing this thing. I need a DP. I need a sound person. We need a location. We need all these things. Who do we know? Who is willing to volunteer their time? Who am I going to have to shoot a little money to just to make sure?" Usually, I have to say, usually it's the sound. Because they're coming with so much equipment and like they can rent that equipment out, you know? So,
Yeah, usually, well, and also usually sound wants to get paid because if you're like a cinematographer, you get footage. If you're an actor, you're a director, sound is like they come in, you know, they do the hard work and then they're off to the next one. So yeah, usually sound, you know, the paycheck is a big end up bringing all that equipment. Yeah, for
But I
sure.
mean, you know, I do think, yeah, like, you know, if or like there's a scene from a play and you're just like, "This is such a great scene. I want it on my reel." Like, yay. Oh, that's another thing, by the way. You know, looking at reels on Actors Access, and sometimes people think like, "Well, I haven't amassed that much on my reel yet," or, "Well, I have all this comedy, but this is a drama, and I do dramatic acting, but I don't have it on film yet. Like, I haven't been hired to do it yet, but I've done it on stage." So you're going to go shoot a thing. You know, stuff like that, you can actually put a clip from on your Actors Access, you know, and we'll look at it. Sometimes people put a clip from a self-tape because it's so specific, you know, and you mark it like trial lawyer or, you know, something quite specific so we know what we're looking at, you know, but it could be something that you don't have. And if it's a if it's a really good self-tape, it's like one of the ones you're proud of, and it was well lit and we can hear you, you know, it's like, you know, one of those ones. Yeah. I love looking at that stuff. Like, it's like, it doesn't matter. I just want to know what you look and sound like on film and to see if you're in the pocket. Like when we're doing short films, we're doing AFI films, right? Yeah, I just, you know, yeah, want to get a sense of what you'd be like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Victoria, I got a question because there's a couple of things I'm curious what you want to talk about as far as either like acting, being a like working as a professor, directing. What have we not touched on that you're excited about?
That I'm excited about. Well, let's see. Okay. So when I don my acting hat, so people say, "Oh my gosh, you do so much, isn't it too much?" And I do believe one needs to focus. You know, like you, otherwise you're just running around too many places and you're only half doing things, right? Mm-hmm. So like you want to focus on the thing you're focused on because nothing's going anywhere. Like our business isn't going anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge like to stay current, you know, making sure that my acting chops are still strong, you know? And for me, there's actually a couple of groups that formed during the pandemic that still meet on Zoom, where you're doing like 10 minute scenes. You might be thrown something to read cold, or you might have had a chance to like read it once. Yeah. But many of the people there are writers, but many are actors who now are writers. They're just like, ooh, I had this idea for a thing, and it's beautiful being thrown. So it's called Station House, by the way. And our pal Bjorn Johnson and Kevin.
Kevin McCorkle.
Like the people that you know started that started this, right? But you know, when you're thrown something in the moment, you just have to commit. Yep. You know, and you know, so that's awesome. So. When the actor hat is on, and this is for everybody, it's, you know, stay active, you know, even if you're just doing play readings or screenplay readings in your living room, you know, I mean, but just stay active, stay working on text, whatever it is. Sometimes classes can get expensive, particularly now, because so many people are not working. I will say, I went to a USC audition over the weekend. Like,
yeah,
USC has this really cool program where they shoot a four camera sitcom.
Yep.
You know, from inception all the way through to in front of a live audience, right? Mm-hmm. And a director knew me and had me come in, and it's like, oh, four camera. that's how I started, you know.
I miss it.
I love it, you know. Yeah. And they laughed. She gave me direction. They laughed even more. Oh, I miss in-person auditions because I get instant feedback.
Yeah, for sure. The energy from that laughing. Is amazing.
So I know I've done my job, right? And I walk out and I feel like $1 million. I didn't get it. Who got it? My pal, who I talked to when I was there, who's adorable, who we're very much alike. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And she got it. And I'm like, adorable you. Well, have fun and let me know how it goes. You know what I mean? So this is to say that I do think that still being an actor, albeit not working as much as I used to, and being in readings and working with actors and watching actors, like, makes me a better casting director, you know. It just really, because I feel like certainly for theater, and certainly when we're, you know, certainly when you're doing AFI films and people aren't making any money or very little, you know, like knowing what actors are capable of, they don't just do one thing.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I remember when I first got out to LA, it was very much a one thing town. You picked your one thing, and it's not like
your
that thing, anymore.
What's your
it's
lane?
Not like
and,
that,
and
it's not like that anymore at all. I mean,
And I mean, you know, actors will sometimes say to me, "I know you don't see me this way. Can I send you tape?" Mm. It's like, like, oh God, I don't want to be the person that says, "Oh, this they're not that thing." Do you know what I mean? But it's different thing. I will tell the AFI fellows when they start their casting process, I will say, listen, if you're looking at somebody's materials and you don't see the thing that your movie is about, right? Well, they don't have this thing. It's not that they can't do that kind of character. They just haven't been hired to yet. They haven't been asked to yet. you know,
yep,
mainly yep. hired to, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, but my gosh, it's a self tape, audition them,
yeah.
you know, because actors will surprise you. Actors are full of surprises. Mm-hmm. But see, that then goes back to the preparation, yeah. you know, because
yes.
it's yes. like, what can you do that is surprising? That is a choice that nobody else made. Do you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I love that you've got that experience to give, you know, younger people, or maybe not always younger, but letting them know, like, just because you don't see it doesn't mean they can't do it, because I think that's a wonderful, it's this funny thing where it's like, well, we've seen Jim Carrey be funny and we just want to keep seeing him be funny. And he's like, I want to do other things too. You know what I mean? And so I love, Victoria, that you fight for the actors and you, you know, are an actor yeah. and you know that world. I think that's a really, you know, when I ran castings and being an actor and now being a teacher, you know, sometimes like the way directors would talk to actors and like, I'd be like, oh God, you know, like they just had no way, they didn't know how to handle actors. You know what I mean? And then they,
yeah.
you know, maybe you get worse or something. And then the actor would leave. They'd be like, what's wrong with that actor? I'd be like, oh man, well, your direction was, you know, in my head, you know, you wouldn't say it, but you'd be like, oh, well, the direction wasn't, you know, sometimes, and a lot of times it's helpful, but you know what I mean? Like, you're just like,
yeah.
you haven't worked with actors. You don't understand, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, some, right? Some
people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, I had the producer of Heroes of the Fourth Turning say to me, he's an actor as well, but he's doing a lot more producing lately,
yeah.
you know, and for me, and he noted this, he says, you know, a lot of casting directors, you know, who are wonderful and who are great casting directors might be a little more cut and dry with mm-hmm. their energy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that they don't like you. It means that they're busy. It means they have a different kind of personality, right?
Yep.
But for me, I do tend to lean in and make sure they get information and make sure that they feel confident when they walk in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, you yeah. know, I just want them to feel like $1 million. But again, it's that thing where like, don't take anything personally, like, you know, yeah. whatever the situation is, if it feels, ooh, this situation feels rather sterile to me. It's like, well, that doesn't matter to your work. Go do your thing.
Yeah.
I'm guessing
that was Justin. Was that Justin?
Yes.
Yes. So Victoria, I know Justin. We did like a Chapman film like many, many years ago. Yeah. And we were three outlaws, three yahoos that were going to steal from like a Girl Scouts charity poker game. That was the thing. And then the plan goes awry. And it was so much fun. Justin, myself, and another guy.
Oh,
a long time ago. I figured it was Justin because he's such a good guy. So I love
him. He's so great. Yeah. He's so great. He's awesome. And also, here's another thing I'd like to say to actors out there. It is okay, your agents may disagree with you. It is so okay to say no. Mm. If you read something and it is just not connecting with you, mm. you know, or there's something in it that you just really like, ugh, that's not for me, yep. you know, yep. it's so fine to pass. Like, you can just decline that audition. a casting director is never going to think worse of you. They're like, okay, catch you next time.
Yeah. Yep.
Really, it's just that simple. You know, now you got to have the conversation with your representation to say, there's going to be things that I'm going to pass on that I'm not going to be interested in. And I need to know that you're okay with that. Mm-hmm. You know, so
ooh, Victoria, here's a good question that brings up.
Mm.
This is interesting. What if an actor, for some reason, just life happens and they feel like super underprepared? Should they still come to the audition, do you think, or should they cancel if they feel very underprepared? Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. sometimes it's great just to show up, but then also, you know, like, I mean, I guess it kind of probably depends on your relationship with them, but I'm just thinking about that because sometimes it feels like, oh, you know, life's gotten so busy. I barely had any time on this. I should go, but also, you know what I mean?
What I might suggest is, yeah. and it really depends, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, there's a casting director out there I'm thinking of, and she, when she does theater, she schedules quite specifically and quite tightly. And mm-hmm. if you can't make the thing, you can't make the thing. And, mm-hmm. and there's not going to be another time for you to come, mm-hmm. you know, she's very much, it is what it is, you know,
yep.
Cause she's got a lot of people to see. Right. But I, you know, I've had that happen before where somebody came in and they were on book and they left, and of course it was a company member and somebody we want to love and we thought was right for the role, and we're looking at each other saying, well, they made no choices whatsoever. Mm. They were just not prepared at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it does one of two things. It's like, it either leaves a bad taste in our mouths, like, you didn't even prepare,
yeah.
or it's just so completely forgettable,
yeah.
and unmemorable, that, you know, it's like, you're not, you're by proxy not thought of the next time because it wasn't memorable. But I think communication is better. Now, you can say, hey, life is, you don't have to say, I haven't had time to prepare for this, right? Because casting and directors will say like, but you're an actor, you should be able to make choices. Mm-hmm. You should be able to look at that script. You should be able to write in the margins and do what you need to do just to make some choices and go, right? Mm-hmm. You got know thyself, you got to know yourself. Mm-hmm. If that's not you, if you need more time, you don't have to say, I've got enough time to look at this. You can say, hey, life is happening. I'm not able to make it there today. Are there any other opportunities or can I send tape? Mm-hmm. But if you haven't had time, don't say, can I send tape if you can't send that tape and get it to them like sometime by the next day.
Right.
Where you just need a little more time.
Right.
You know, to work on it. But for live auditions, being on book, having paper in your hand doesn't matter in the slightest. It's just that you do need to have made choices. And I will say that to a person for the Heroes of the Fourth Turning callback, off book. They were all off book.
All off book, yeah. I feel like that's the standard. I mean, I love that. And but I'm saying like for most self tapes and stuff now too. Yeah, it's a very much more of an off book.
It's hard to look down, but for self tapes now there are programs. There are the
teleprompters.
The teleprompter programs. Yeah. You know, but you know, here's the thing. You show up on set. You better
be able to do
lines.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. A friend of mine works on a show that shoots sometimes in Utah or Texas, and someone showed up and. They booked off a self tape and they couldn't do it.
Oof.
So yeah, that's brutal.
It's brutal. It's bad. I was like working opposite somebody like that.
Yeah.
On a really big show. And it was like,
yeah.
So
it hurts.
Well, Victoria, this has been amazing. We have one final segment that we love that we call
your best bad acting.
So what we're going to do is Corbin. I love that. Corbin's going to put a quote and we went old school. This is an actress from back in the day because we thought you'd appreciate this.
Uh-huh.
And the idea with this is you can have fun. You can throw an accent on it. You can have fun. Corbin, you want to explain where this is from?
Yeah, this is... Katharine Hepburn, and I'm forgetting what's it from again? It's the
On Golden Pond.
Yeah, that's
right. Oh, come on.
Yeah, exactly. So you can go over the top. You can do an act. The point is just to have fun with it, and we might give you a redirect. But the point is just to be bad in the sense, not to be, you know, just to have fun with it. That's the point. Yes. So.
Whenever. Do you want the tremor?
Oh, if you can do it.
You can do it. Katharine Hepburn here.
Oh God! Don't hate me for mangling Katherine Hepburn, but let's give it a go.
That's the fun part. Okay.
Listen to me, Mister. You're my knight in shining armor. Don't you forget it. You're gonna get back on that horse, and I'm going to be right behind you, holding on tight. And away we're gonna go.
Oh my God, that was so good.
That was such a specific voice, Victoria. Amazing.
Oh, love it.
I definitely have a redirect, which is I got to see this with four cameras, Victoria. This is a sitcom now. What's your sitcom?
Okay.
This is okay.
I'm actually going to try to like make it make sense.
Yeah.
Like actually give it a little. Okay.
Cool. Oh, good. Yeah.
Okay. But see, you have to know what you're talking about, right? So.
Yes.
What if I should be literal about actually getting on a horse? Absolutely. Okay. Right. You want to know what I'm thinking? Do you want to know what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm thinking is I'm deciding in this moment in time, this is my 12-year-old who actually fell off a horse.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, and he's scared.
Yeah.
He's scared. Great. Love that.
And it's like Nickelodeon.
Well, that's
Disney
that's,
Channel, yeah, yeah, whatever.
That's big four camera. Yeah. That's big.
You know what I mean? Like that's where they're happening right now, right? So I'm trying to just get real specific, y'all.
Victoria,
I
had an audition for one of those once. I went as big as I could go with my face, and they said go bigger. I was like, I don't think it's possible. I swear, it was.
Wow. They're bigger. Okay, so let me see. My 12-year-old. Let me do this. Okay. Listen to me, mister. You are my knight in shining armor. Don't you forget it. No, you're going to get back on that horse, and I'm going to be right behind you, holding on tight, and away we will go, go, go.
So hot. That was amazing. That was that was so different than the first time and so good. Oh my, that way actually kind of made way more sense that way for some reason in my brain, even though I liked them both. That was amazing, Victoria. So good.
But right, doesn't it, like, in the moment, you talk about being prepared. In the moment, as long as you're specific.
Yeah. Yes.
Make a choice. Make a choice. Right. Go with it 100%.
Yeah. Great.
That's amazing.
So specific. So good. So good. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, Victoria, this has been amazing. And what a great ending, man. This was lovely. What a high note to end on, right, Corbin?
Oh, so great.
I didn't know what would happen with this quote. So you crushed it, Victoria. This
Yay! Was amazing. So,
thank you. I know. So, well, Victoria, this has been lovely. Thank you so much for your time. It's really been amazing.
Thank you.
And I love hearing what a connector you are, what an advocate for actors you are, an actor yourself, actress yourself, teaching, I'm obviously in a good way. I've only heard lovely things about you, and I know you're and I know you're lovely. So I just think it's great. I'm such a fan of, you know, people in this business that are good people, you know, and so I just appreciate you.
I think we can absolutely be kind and supportive in what we do. I think it yields the best returns.
I agree.
So, well, lovely. Well put. Thank you so much for being here, Victoria. This was a blast. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
You are so welcome.
Thanks, Victoria. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Life Podcast.